again time for the New American Dream Radio Show. The American Russian novel, All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Out. We have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, a tortured tundra.
What we must have is a new American dream. We are allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. A new American dream. Not of homes and toasters, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. The new America, the real hope of the world.
Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink. And listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
A few more hours, that's all the time I got. A few more hours before I tie the knot. There'll be drinks and girls all over the town, and I gotta track 'em down in just a few more hours. I'm getting married in the morning. Ding dong, the bells are gonna chime. Pull up the stopper, we'll have a whopper, but get me to the church on time. I got to get there in the morning, spruced up and looking in my prime. Girls come and kiss me, say that you'll miss me, but get me to the church on time. I am dancing, roll up the floor. If I am whistling right out the door, I got to get there in the morning. Ding dong ding, they're gonna chime. Kick up a rumpus, don't lose your compass. Get me to the church, get me to the church. Please say, get me to the church on time. If I am flying, then shoot me down. If I am wooing, get the girl right out of town. I got to get there in the morning. Ding, ding, dong, they're gonna chime. Punch me and jail me. Stamp me and mail me, but get me to the church. Get me to the church. For Pete's sake, get me to the church on time. Well, you know, I'm not actually getting married in the morning, but 34 years ago I was. So I kind of thought I'd just sing that for my lovely wife, Lorraine Gregory. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show. And we're streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio, and they deserve your support. So head on over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio and show them some love. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck, and congratulations to both of you guys. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Thomas Wortman, Jim Fetzer, Richard Flamer, Frank Cordero, and Phil Ferruzio. So this Thursday evening, we're gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, reasonably close to Duluth, Minnesota, Madison, Wisconsin, in Des Moines, Iowa, in Port Orange, Florida, in Cleveland, Ohio, en route from somewhere to somewhere in an old truck that he picked up somewhere, Pittsburgh, headed west and south, and wherever you are.
Our first guest of the evening is Philip Farrugio from Port Orange, Florida. And I talked to him a little bit earlier, and here is his column. It's the Empire, stupid.
Serial killers and dopes. You know, I recently read Ann Rule's book on serial killer Ted Bundy, a man she knew as a coworker and friend way back in Washington State. Of course, Ann did not have the slightest inkling that this fine, intelligent, charming, and empathetic soul, they worked together in a suicide hotline place, could ever commit the most gruesome and enraged murders of young women over and over again. To Ann and most of Ted's friends, co-workers, and fellow college and law students, he was such a calm and cheery guy. Who could have thunk it? Even after the information filtered down to them, bit by bit over the years, most of them still dismissed any notion that Ted was the one. Even after the police had the name Ted as a possible suspect, fitting Bundy's age and looks, and he drove a Volkswagen Bug just like the guy they were searching for, many who knew him waved off the coincidences as just that. How dopey can a person be to not begin to have second thoughts? Well, we have serial killers running our government. These men happen to be not only our presidents, but others in their administrations who sign on to mass murder. LBJ and Nixon signed off to the carpet bombing of civilian areas during the Vietnam debacle. Bush Sr. did the same thing during that orchestrated Gulf War. Then the cream de la cream of serial killing went to his son, the compassionate conservative, who signed off on the first, he signed off on the carpet bombing of Iraq, replete with the sick phrase by war criminal Rumsfeld of collateral damage. A few years later, the Bush gang began using drone missiles to destroy terrorist suspects and anyone else who happened to be around them at the time, usually little kids with their moms and, of course, a few of the elderly thrown in for good measure. Then Mr. Hope and Change took office and decided to amp up the use of drone attacks by 10 times. Lots of blood and loose body parts, making the Ted Bundy crime scenes pale in comparison. Now we have our newest apprentice serial killer, already allowing his generals to continue the drone attacks and other misadventures in the desert. Oh, I know, what these presidents and their fruit salad-wearing generals used as justification, it was to win a war. Yet no war was declared on North Vietnam or Afghanistan, Pakistan, Libya, Yemen, and of course Iraq. Thus, to any historian worth his or her salt, when these stories are told years into the future, the term serial killers should be used. Of course, we all know that they won't. Now we come to the dopes of empire. Goodness, we have millions of them, don't we? Those of us who opposed the first and second so-called wars on Iraq had to put up with the constant cheerleading by both our embedded in empire media and, of course, many of our neighbors and coworkers. These dopes couldn't get enough news of the destruction of Iraq and Afghanistan. Who cared about the actual civilians who had to wait hours for fresh drinking water each day, if lucky enough to even have any? Who cared about the little kids missing an arm or a leg or an ear from our smart bombs? We won the peace, and that is all that mattered. We brought democracy to those countries, as well as massive recruitment for the fanatics calling themselves ISIL or Al-Qaeda. If we never invaded and occupied Iraq, there would be no threat from those fanatics. How many more lives have to be destroyed by our serial killer empire? Not only via our WMDs, but through the strangling of our already depressed economy. Like the lemmings running over the cliffs of reason, our fellow American dopes may never learn. Thank you.
My recommended for the night, recent articles published on the Parkland school shooting at jamesfetzer.blogspot.com. Also, Scott Creighton, American Everyman. It's on YouTube. The YouTube channel is called Church Dog 42, and the title is Father of Anti-Gun Crusader, Works for Major CIA-Linked Defense Contractor. Another recommended, Mike Patterson, Sasquatch, Ontario. It's on YouTube also. It's titled The Bigger Truth, and this is part of it. This is what happens to those who get too close to the truth, the real truth being Sasquatch. UFOs and ETs are all related. Those who gain contact at a certain level learn the truth through interactions that there is a dark agenda on this earth to suppress this knowledge from the masses. A conscious awakening is feared most by those in power. The truth of Sasquatch awakens humanity and detaches us from the confines of those in power. Wake up. Mike Patterson, Sasquatch, Ontario, Ontario, YouTube. It's called The Bigger Truth. The March issue of Penn Magazine is now published online at pennmagazine.us, P-E-N-N magazine.us. Because we have lived in the United States of America for years and years and decades, we realize that when something like the Parkland school shooting occurs, we must inherently question the account given of the event by our government and our media, because they have demonstrated time and time again that they are totally untrustworthy. But today, we are talking about Bigfoot and aliens, and at least we know they are real. Welcome to the March edition of Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N magazine.us. And now, regarding the Parkland shooting, there is a video on Gemstone Freelance website that shows the Hog Kid rehearsing his lines. And this alone shows that the event at Parkland was a false flag, manipulated. Did people die? People are currently disagreeing about that. It is being studied. Either way, it is an almost unfathomable situation to think about people sitting down and planning this. And if people did die, to imagine Americans sitting down and planning to murder these high school students. And yet, and right here is where it gets even weirder. If you go on a safari through a number of popular liberal websites, Common Dreams, Alternate, The Nation, The Progressive, there are dozens of these. They treat Parkland as if it were real, totally real, organic, that the real issues are mental health and guns. Why? I simply do not understand. Why can't so-called liberals, leftists, progressives take the time to study these events? Why are you right-wing if you take time to learn? These people, these websites, are in favor of so many good things. Why can't they be bothered to go for the high-hanging fruit, the core, the root, the truth? Please tell me, because I obviously don't get it.
And now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater. Bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Charlottesville, and so much more. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world wails, fists clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and alleluia, while they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before, but after all is said and done, they are Americans. The construction's underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system and to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with the message, let me put it this way. While 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been since 9/11 accomplice after the fact by maintaining the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal. Well, the nuts have returned to the big White House from the ping pong Winter Olympics to find cardboard boxes pretty much everywhere. President Cosmo and First Lady Imelda are supposed to host the annual Cherry Blossom Festival later this month, but because they have to go bowling. They will not be able to attend. And so Cosmo is calling for a dollar signs, boobs, and tanks festival in its place to be held this weekend. Cosmo and Imelda Nutt barely noticed the cardboard secrets box's mess. Cosmo and Imelda had a little time. They had to wash their bowling shirts and hop on Air Force One after the dollar signs, booms, and tanks festival to head to Dayton for the next stop on the American Yahoo's Doubles Bowling Tour, representing their sponsor, Ali's House of Jihad. After the child left behind, faced down the Bradley tank, all the tanks turned around and left, leaving the child left behind and Skippy the construction worker and self-taught on YouTube demolition expert sitting on the curb going through all the boxes of secrets they were letting loose into the air. "Here's one that's all still taped up," said Skippy, bringing the cardboard box over to set it between them. "Must be a new one," said the child left behind. Skippy ripped away the tape and they began taking out the papers about this newest secret. Skippy read, "That's not the way the world really works anymore," he continued. "We're an empire now, and when we act, we create our own reality. And while you are studying that reality, judiciously as you will, we'll act again, creating other new realities, which you can study too, and that's how things will sort out. We are history's actors, and you, all of you, will be left to just study what we do." Carl Rove.
The child left behind read, "The so-called lone nut, mind-controlled gunmen who kill Americans every year are, in general, not acting alone. Time after time, reports of more than one gunman involved in such shootings are suppressed by the mainstream media, whether it be the Las Vegas incident or the Florida school shooting. These are covert, false flag operations that have only one purpose: to build pressure in the direction of banning guns. While the oligarchy or the elite wants to take guns away from the citizenry, the civilian law enforcement is being militarized with rocket launchers, armored vehicles, and military gear. One may ask why. The Florida shooting appears to have been a very complicated staged media event with operators and contributors coming from the Democratic National Party, local law enforcement, military, the county school board, the FBI, and Secret Service. No doubt this staged media event involves millions of dollars in bribes, payoffs, and fees. A Parkland, Florida Stoneman Douglas High School teacher says the school had been told there would be a code red drill. When he heard shooting, he assumed it was the drill. What is so difficult about the authorities and the media explaining either that the teacher and students misunderstood and are mistaken that a drill had been announced, or alternatively explaining why there are several instances of an actual event occurring simultaneously with an announced drill? A person would think that the print and TV media would find a very interesting subject in real events occurring simultaneously with drills of the events, including apparently 9/11 itself, and how facts are known in advance of the actual event. Instead, once again, we get a pre-prepared story. In this one, timeline problems are reminiscent of the BBC reporter standing in front of a still-standing World Trade Center Building 7 on September 11, 2001, announcing that the unexpected collapse of the building had occurred 20 or 30 minutes before the event. Many Americans are so brainwashed and so gullible that they are not capable of seeing that the evidence completely contradicts the official stories that they are fed by the authorities and the press. More irregularities in the official school shooting scenario. Secret Service shows up 2 weeks earlier to change safety protocols. School notified in advance an active shooter drill would take place in the near future and told it would happen without notice. The morning of the shooting, students are involved with school safety drills with law enforcement. That afternoon before the shooting began, the fire alarm is pulled and students are asked to leave the building. And then shortly after, a code red, active shooter, was called while the students were still being told to leave the building. Military officers, Army, are at the scene directing students to not look at dead bodies as they file past what appear to be body bags. Shooter arrives in a taxi, Uber, and just walks into the school with a gun case and materials. Shooter apparently gets set up and manages to shoot and kill 19 people in 6 minutes after arriving. Then he is able to put down weapons and blend in with the still exiting for fire drill student population. While Shooter is mixing into student body, he speaks to a friend of his from elementary school. And the friend later tells the local TV news interviewer that she was talking to the shooter while gunshots were being heard in another part of the building. Shooter leaves no wounded, exhibiting expert marksmanship, since the AR-15 223 rounds are small and almost always produce wounded, some dying later, but not in this case. Shooter then casually walks to Walmart and eats at Subway, and then shows up at McDonald's in the same area to get a drink, appearing at an intersection later, just as police were arriving. Four deputies were seen watching the events unfold outside the building, not entering to stop the shooter. Was this because these men were told to stay out? Logic can easily surmise that out of four men, at least one would have responded by trying to stop the shooting. These men are not all cowards. This indicates they're in on the staged operation. While Sandy Hook, Las Vegas, 9/11, and other false flag events, there are no releases of video footage, no photos of dead children, no autopsy reports, no hospitals reporting examining students after the shooting. The deep state in the U.S. has been defined in different ways. Peter Del Scott of the University of California, Berkeley, has called it the politically active rich. That is, the people who have so much money that they are above the law. The same way the mafia or criminal underworld is below the law. These people are above the law. So they rig elections. They assassinate presidents. JFK was a notable victim. And candidates, his brother Bobby Kennedy, and senators, U.S. Senator Paul Wellstone. These people run the drug trade. The CIA dominates the world drug trade, as Professor Alfred McCoy of the University of Wisconsin proved decades ago, and he is still writing about that. So the deep state is essentially a kind of criminal gang that works with the world's wealthiest people, especially those here in the U.S., and runs the United States behind the scenes. We should also mention that they rig elections using computer election fraud.
Cosmo and Imelda Nutt waved to the crowd and saluted the Marine standing at the helicopter as they got on board carrying their brand new bowling bags. Last thing anyone saw was the sweaty backs of their brown and yellow shirts that read, Ali's House of Jihad. As Rusty the Patsy climbed up again, up onto the White House garage, as Mama Pajama Jemima the MK Ultra trainer stood close by. 28 years old with a flower set cape tied all around his neck. He climbed up on the garage, he's figuring, what the heck? Well, he screwed his courage up so tight that the whole thing came unwound. He got a running start, and bless his heart, he headed for the ground.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies. But it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
My time of day is the dark time. A couple of years before dawn, when the street belongs to the cop and the janitor with the mop, and the grocery clerks are all gone, when the smell of the rain-washed pavement comes up clean and fresh and cold, and the street lamp light fills the gutter with gold. That's my time of day, my time of day. It's the only doll I've ever wanted to share it with me.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100%.
It's great to be with you radio. Again. I'm afraid the United States is in the midst of a three-state takedown.
Our next guest of the evening is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from the Des Moines Catholic Worker. The Des Moines Catholic Worker is part of a loose-knit group of houses all around the United States and the world that serve the poor and also that do a fair amount of resisting to the military machines of the various countries, especially the United States. And Frank Cordero spent quite a bit of time in jail for his part in that. And now we're going to hear Frank Cordero's conversation with Chuck Gregory.
Actually, Mike, I have some bad news. I was out with Lorraine at her new doctor at the time when I normally call Frank, and I never got that done. We don't have Frank tonight. Sorry about that, but, well... Yeah, life interfered.
there's nothing you could do about that. Hey, do you want to, I was wondering, do you want to take a little bit of time to talk about the local political campaign you've been involved in down there?
Well, sure. That sounds like a good idea. Coming up this next Tuesday, the 13th, there is a municipal election here in Fort Lauderdale, and there are a few commissioner seats. Fort Lauderdale is run by there's six city commissioners and a mayor, so several of the commissioner seats are up for grabs, and so is the mayoral position. A good friend of mine, Tim Smith, is running for commissioner in District 2. And I really think that he's the best man for the job and would do a great job. And it's refreshing to actually have somebody that I feel like I can trust that's going to willing to, you know, go out and be in public office, because most of them seem like they've got special interests and all kinds of secret agendas. And Tim, well, he seems like the genuine article. He cares about people and he listens to what they want.
What's some of the work you've had to do to help out with that?
Oh, I've done a few different things. I've helped him out on his website. I have made some calls. I made, you know, a couple of hundred calls, I guess, to people who had, you know, voted and, you know, were on this list. So I wanted to remind them that the election was coming up and tell them about issues and so forth. And then one time I did the same kind of a thing, going through a neighborhood. We had a list of people who were on the who actually go out and vote, and we went up to their doors and talked to them and reminded them to vote again, you know, vote in this election just like they had in the primary or other ones. You know, the one interesting thing about this election is that even though we're a city of, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand people or something, only about 7,000 or 8,000 actually vote in these elections. So, you know, one person's vote can make a pretty big difference.
Are you in the infamous Broward County?
We are in Broward County, yes. In the primary for this thing, over 500 votes sent in by absentee ballot didn't get counted because they got in too late. Even though people had sent them in, you know, well ahead of deadline, they were mysteriously delayed in the mail. So that's kind of a fishy thing going on. Of course, we're not really sure how that would benefit one person or another, though. So, but I don't know. Some interesting stuff going on.
How do you get yourself to do this, to get out the door, to take the time to do it when, you know, a lot of people. More, I don't know, maybe there's, I just think that people are kind of sick of politics and say, what's the use and blah, blah. You know, like but Bernie Sanders and Hillary and all that with the Democratic Party, what a bunch of hooey. They're all crooked and they're not really, you know, every time you get fired up about somebody like Bernie Sanders, he goes ahead and turns on you. I mean, how do you get the spirit to want to go out and do that?
Well, like I said, I know the guy. You know, he's I sing in his band, you know, so I really know him quite well, and we've talked about, issues and things, over a drink or whatever, when, informally, long before he was thinking about trying to, run for the commissioner again. And he makes a lot of sense. I don't agree with everything he wants, but I don't think there's anybody I'd agree with everything they want.
He's running for what? County commissioner?
City commissioner. City commissioner.
So the question would be, what good can a city commissioner do? What's the issues that he can have any impact on?
They can have impact on building. How much new development should go on in the city? What are we going to do about the infrastructure? When our sewers are having problems and back up all over some of the streets in some areas, how do we make sure that the people in poorer areas get the same opportunities for public facilities as the ones in the rich areas? There are lots of things like that. It's local issues, but these are the ones where individuals can really make a difference. And this is not, it's like, the grassroots kind of thing. It starts from the bottom. You have to have dedicated people working at a local level before you can even think about making a difference at a national level. And, with the national level, we're so wrapped up in this two-party, one-party system or whatever you want to call it. But, these municipal elections, it's not Democrat versus Republican. There's no parties involved. It's people get up there and, they're individuals. So
how big is the field he's running in?
This is a runoff. There in the primary, there were five people running for the commission slot for District 2, and so now he's in a runoff between the he came in second, so he's in the runoff against the guy that came in first.
So it's between these two people.
Exactly.
And what's his name again?
Tim Smith. He gets things.
Tim Smith, a likely name. What's his real name?
Yeah.
And when is the election?
The election is Tuesday, March 13th, just 5 days from now.
Do you have to be registered beforehand to vote, or can you show up and vote?
No, you have to be registered. I'm not sure how long ahead, but
and you don't have to be you can vote for him if you're Democrat, Republican, or Green Party, anything, right?
Exactly. There's no parties involved in our municipal elections here.
That's cool. Well, way to go, Chuck. I applaud you for getting out and doing it. I think that's awesome. And now we get the view from Uncle Bill's front porch. Conspiracies are real. There are many more of them than people are aware. Just Google, for example, Operation Gladio or the Northwoods Project. These conspiracies alone are sufficient to chastise those uninformed Western peoples who go around saying our government would never kill its own people. False flag attacks are used by governments in order to pursue secret agendas that they cannot publicly acknowledge. President George W. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney had said, "We are going to attack Iraq and a half dozen other countries in order to exercise hegemony over the Middle East, steal their oil, and clear the path for Israel to steal the entirety of the West Bank of Palestine, diverting taxpayers' resources from serving the American people into the pocket of the armaments industries and spilling the blood of your parents, spouses, children, and siblings. Even the American sheeple would have resisted. Instead, following the famous advice of Hitler's chief propagandist, they said, our country has been attacked. Generally speaking, an observant person with a bit of education can recognize a false flag attack. However, a few people pay attention beyond what the official media says and the media no longer investigates and questions, but simply repeats the official story. Therefore, only a few realize what has really happened, and when these few open their mouths, they are discredited as conspiracy theorists. This method of control might be wearing thin. There have been so many false flag terrorist attacks in the 21st century that there are now thousands of experts labeled as conspiracy theorists. The neoconservatives who controlled the George W. Bush regime called for a new Pearl Harbor so that they could begin their wars of conquest in the Middle East. A new Pearl Harbor is what 9/11 gave them. The charge conspiracy theory is used to prevent investigation. 9/11 was not investigated. The Boston Marathon bombing was not investigated. A scripted story was issued and repeated by the media. The San Bernardino shootings were not investigated. Again, a pre-scripted story took the place of an investigation. The success of false flag attacks in the U.S. led to their use in the U.K. and France. The Charlie Hebdo affair was not investigated, and the official explanation makes no sense. The story was closed with all the loose ends dangling. For example, why did a French police official investigating the crime allegedly commit suicide in his police office in the early hours of the morning, and why was his family denied the autopsy report? What happened to this disappeared story? Dear Western peoples, if you wish to be able to walk down the streets of your cities without being accosted by police, demanded to present identity papers, searched, detained indefinitely, or assassinated without due process of law, if you wish to be able to express your opinion about your government and its use of your tax payments, if you wish to be able to discuss current affairs or your personal affairs without being recorded by the NSA or the equivalent in your own country or by both, if you wish to live in the freedom that was achieved in the West after centuries of struggle, wake up, find time from less meaningful pursuits to become aware of what is being stolen from you. It is late in the game. If you do not stand up for truth, you will have no freedom, as there is no freedom without truth. The View from Uncle Bill's Front Porch, sponsored by Homemade Apple Pie in the bright red can. Our next guest of the show is Richard Flamer. Richard Flamer joins us each month from the Chiapas Catholic Worker in San Cristobal de las Casas, Chiapas, Mexico. This time, Richard goes back and forth to the U.S. to do work and to earn money to take back to the Catholic Worker, and this is one of those times when he's up in the U.S. And so Chuck was able to find him and to talk to him, and we have a recording, an actual recording of that conversation, and we're going to hear it right now. Richard Flamer and Chuck Gregory.
Okay. After the earthquake of September 8, 2017, Araceli and I worked on several trips to the region of her hometown of Ixtaltepec. Driving a small pickup, we took doors, windows, food, medicine, and tools. We succeeded in getting five families off the street and repaired houses. The long haul began at the end of January, when the work of rebuilding began. Tearing down the old walls, hauling the rough, digging footings for the new, etc. I kept taking tools and training young people along the way until I ran out of extra tools. I'm currently in the U.S. collecting tools in a truck and looking for funds to pay for labor. In typical Catholic Worker fashion, I took off from Chiapas to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where I met up with Vincent Irini, who ran a Catholic Worker house there. The heavy-duty truck he donated had been sitting for a couple of years. We replaced rusted brake lines, got a duplicate title, and started preparing it for a 3,000-mile journey. Victor is a grand spirit, but is barely able to walk. He exists on what donations he can find, so my free truck ended up costing me $600 for insurance, title transfer, and small repairs. The driver's door would not shut completely. The heater did not work well. I spent 2 days clearing trash and a good jacket from the rear seat. The jacket came with gloves, so I managed to clear out most of the wood, mud, and trash out of the box. After all was ready, I took off from Milwaukee and Marquette University, where I worked with Mark Thiel, one of the archivists, on identifying numerous photos, almost 400, and meeting with some of the faculty, visiting the small, lovely art museum, trying to get a sense of what I could do from Chiapas without more trips to Wisconsin. I donated all my photo archives, 80,000 black and white negatives and 30,000 slides, along with almost 400 books. While in Milwaukee, I got to stay with Bob Groff and his wife, Pat. Bob was one of the original Milwaukee 14 and still keeps up a website and is in touch with most of the brave souls who, using homemade napalm, burned draft records during the Vietnam War. Bob continues to work with Works of Mercy, shuffling old folks around in his car for appointments, etc. He also is still active with his protest work in trying to halt the ROTC programs at Catholic universities, especially Marquette. He is, to put it bluntly, a great spirit and a pain in the ass to Marquette, the Jesuits, and has even managed to anger the Catholic worker community in Milwaukee. Mostly keeps insisting that words are not enough, actions are needed. No more forums on racial injustice. March and protest, and turn over the tables of the money changers within the temple. While at Marquette, I delivered another exhibition of photos, some 50 in number, a kind of retrospective of my time covering Guatemalan refugee camps in Mexico, the Nicaraguan elections when Violeta Chamorro won the presidency over Daniel Ortega, day-to-day life in a camp of repatriated Salvadoran refugees at the end of the war. Portraits of Rigoberto Menchú, of the martyred priest Larry Rosebaugh, of Jimmy Carter overseeing the elections, of everyday suffering in Guatemala, El Salvador, southern Mexico, Nicaragua, and a few of the U.S. While in Milwaukee, I also worked with Dak Groff, a former children's librarian, in collecting children's books in Spanish for a friend in San Cristobal who runs a reading club for young girls. From Milwaukee, I drove in the cold and the rain, with the driver's door opening roughly every 50 miles. The windshield wipers didn't work, so I'd pull over to wait out the showers and kept filling the tank of gas for the big 8-cylinder motor. I got to Des Moines, where I could relax for a few days, went on to Omaha to the home of my friend Charlie, the mechanic, where we fixed the door, the wipers, changed plugs, and did a minor tune-up. During the time in Omaha, I got a word that my cousin Jimmy Fadden and the rest of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band would be playing in Kansas City. So Charlie and I sped down Interstate 29, where we met up with my other cousin, Peggy, and we all went to the concert. What a riot. It's great to not only see friends and family, but also to realize how successful they've been. And they continue to make great music. Gathering tools and books, I've returned to Des Moines, doing some talks at churches with friends, and I'm starting to raise money. Looks like I will have a full truck when I head out in 2 weeks with tools from various friends. Araceli, my wife, flew up earlier this week and will be volunteering at the Catholic Worker in both Des Moines and Iowa City while she takes evening classes to better her English. Mostly she came up to spend her time riding the buses to the various thrift stores for bargains to take back for our community. And, of course, more shoes for herself. I am blessed. My life is hectic, chaotic, and full of adventure. And every time I visit, I'm in awe over the generosity of the people I meet. I will be heading over to Omaha again and collecting more tools. Michael Murphy, a musician and fellow protester, will be joining me from Omaha. And we'll be driving down both to visit my cousin Peggy in Kansas City and on down to my friend Jim Groff in San Antonio, Texas, and from there down to Brownsville, and all the way on down to Chiapas and our little farm. I expect to be there around the 20th, maybe the 21st. So that's what I'm doing.
Well,
how about you?
That sounds like a very full trip.
It is both full and frightening. There's something about driving a 91 Chevy that hasn't been driven for 10 years to, one expects to have problems, but when I had to replace the brake lines, that was the worst part of it, driving without brakes.
Yeah, that's not much fun. I've had that pleasure before. It's adventurous, but it's not fun.
So I'm learning all about my smartphone as well. 2 weeks before I left Chiapas, I bought a smartphone, a Xiaomi from China, and it's working out really, really well. But I've got to figure out how it works. Fact of the matter is, I hate having a phone that's smarter than I am.
They only think they're smarter than we are.
That's all for this week, this month, and I'll get back to you next month. By next month, I should be back and operating in Chiapas again and heading on down to Oaxaca to repair houses and build houses.
Okay.
It's a great, great life.
You have a wonderful life, Richard. When I listen to you, I'm just amazed by what you're doing, and you always sound like, you know, you're really enjoying it.
Oh, I am, and I got the best wife in the world, best life in the world. I just couldn't ask for better. Although I sure wish I had a young man's body.
Yeah.
The older I get, the harder it is to do that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's okay.
Okay.
And,
indeed.
Have a good time. Have a great life. And we'll see you.
have a safe trip. And
okay.
Thanks again.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Velvet, I can wish you for the color of your coat and fortune smiling all along your way. But more I cannot wish you than to wish you find your love, your own true love this day. Mansions I can wish you, 7-foot men all in red, and calling cards upon a silver tray. But more I cannot wish you than to wish you find your love, your own true love this day. Standing there, gazing at you, full of the bloom of you. Standing there, gazing at you, with the sheep's eye and the licorice too. Music I can wish you, merry music while you're young, and wisdom when your hair has turned to gray. But more I cannot wish you than to wish you find your love, your own true love this day.
listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Anti-aircraft guns went into action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning.
We are far stronger than we were 10 weeks ago.
General Quarters, all hands man your battle stations.
You're nervous, count your toes. I'll do the mastermind around here.
Those who have not seen it do not know what hell looks like from the top.
Check it out every Tuesday and Saturday on Revolution Radio. It's a double dose of the internationally recognized renegade military historian, Douglas Dietrich.
You'll stay right where you are till I tell you to move out.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight Eastern Time. Join Douglas Dietrich as he exposes the truth in hidden history on his show, Critical Omissions. And then our human weapon of mass destruction is back once again to take your calls on Saturday night firing lines. Both from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Jim Fetzer. Dr. Fetzer is a former philosophy professor, now writer, reporter, radio show host, researcher. He joins us from Madison, Wisconsin.
Chuck, Mike, it's great to be with you again. I'm afraid the United States is in the midst of a three-stage takedown to convert us into a Stalinist society where there's no freedom of speech, no due process, where Americans are subjugated in a messy prison called the United States of America. Dave Hodges has laid it out as proceeding in three stages. Number one, massive censorship to defeat the First Amendment and to curtail multiple voices who are critical of the government, which appears to have been accelerated by exposing the shenanigans in Las Vegas and now in Parkland, would have simply fallen apart before our very eyes. More about that momentarily. Second of all, to take our guns. In other words, this is a two-stage operation against both the First Amendment and the Second. And the reason is, of course, that when you have guns, you can defeat tyranny. A project at the University of Hawaii has shown that 19 genocides that occurred during the last century were preceded by gun confiscation. We must not let it happen here. There are 300 million handguns and well over 100 million long guns in the hands of the citizens of the United States, where the Supreme Court itself has ruled that the Second Amendment applies to individuals and includes their right to hold assault rifles, military weapons. So that what's taking place in terms of attempts to confiscate weapons from Americans are unconstitutional. Third, of course, you got to remove the threats from society, those outspoken persons who are pointing out the hopeless inadequacies in the government's account because they set a bad example. They may inspire others. So you have to remove the threat and install them in the American gulags, which are known as FEMA camps. Now, the fact is that Florida has further fallen apart. We knew, of course, that the Clark County coroner had closed his office just at the time he was being besieged with requests for death certificates and autopsy reports because he didn't have any. As a consequence of Freedom of Information Act requests, the judge handling the case directed that they be released. He hesitated, but now he's released 58, the right number of autopsy reports, but they were gathered from all over the country. These are for 58 disparate parties that had nothing to do with Las Vegas. He's stricken their names and their file numbers, but they came from at least six different coroners around the country. I mean, is anyone going to be played by this? And they have no ballistic evidence where, of course, all the victims at the purported Las Vegas event were shot to death, and therefore the ballistics would be crucial. We have a staggering situation in relation to Parkland, moreover, where it, again, is falling apart in every direction. Let me give you a summary of my most recent update about Parkland, which I presented on the Conspiracy Guy show number 65, which was dated February 28th, where I have this show, The Conspiracy Guy, and the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, run by Gary Null. Only Gary has been disenchanted with what I had to say here. He said that as of Friday, March 3rd, 2018, the Progressive Radio Network has dropped James Fetzer's show, The Conspiracy Guy, due to disheartening show content. Disheartening show content. Well, he certainly got that right. What I had to report was highly disheartening. Here it is. This is a summary that never made it onto my archive page at conspiracyguy.podbean.com. Conspiracy Guy show number 65. Did you know that Sheriff Scott Israel of Broward County drives a Lamborghini? An oddity about Parkland is that we have no surveillance footage or any from the students, which is extremely surprising given their ubiquitous use of cell phone cameras. Live Leaks has posted a minute-long video, which appears to show a body lying in blood. But when you compare the blood with the fake blood that appeared in Boston, it looks the same, not real blood. There are several anomalies here that confirm my suspicion that this was one more staged event, with a caveat that one teacher's testimony, which seems to be sincere, causes me pause. It would be very odd to combine real murders with a staged event, and in this case, we have what I take to be at least three blatant examples of crisis actors among the students: Maddie Wilford, Samantha Fuentes, and biggest and best of all, David Hogg, who evidence suggests graduated from Redondo Shores High School in 2014 and whose father is FBI and mother has ties to CNN. Other experts share my take, including Wolfgang Halbig, Robert David Steele, and Steve Pachinik. The propaganda effort to take down the research of those who disagree or find fault with the official narrative is unprecedented. We need to appreciate that there's an inverse relationship between gun ownership and homicide rates, with the greater the gun ownership, the lower the homicide rate, which means that the push for gun control has no foundation in truth or fiction, even based upon multiple fake shootings. Well, the teacher is one who claimed that she looked out of her classroom door and confronted a police officer or someone dressed thereof in full garb, that he had a helmet, bulletproof vest. He was firing a gun she couldn't recognize. The suggestion has been made that it was a SIM gun. And guess what? It turns out that David Hogg, his father, has a company that makes SIM guns. Moreover, she claimed that she watched as a fellow student was shot to death, a fellow named Scott Beigel, B-E-I-G-E-L, 35. She witnessed the shooting. Now, I have consulted with Alex Scott, who's a 25-year police officer and 15-year general detective who's reviewed the footage and wanted to give me his opinion, since I'd expressed concern that she might be speaking truthfully. Her emotions are all out of whack. She doesn't show the kind of hesitation, the emotion, the reliving of the moment that would be typical. She should have quite literally been in fear for her life, but she shows no such signs. The teacher said she came face to face with a shooter. This would have been frightening, but she shows no emotion. She claims two of her students were shot and killed inside her classroom. By her own description, these were her favorite, but she doesn't even pause. Here's the most telling. She stated her fellow teacher, Todd Beigel, was gunned down in the classroom across the hall. Well, this is quite curious. Alex Scott, went online and began reviewing teacher certifications in the state of Florida Department of Education website. I found the teacher certification and license for Stacy Lipple. That's her. I also found both a teaching license and a coaching certificate for the football coach and school shooting hero, Aaron Feist. Every teacher mentioned with regard to the shooting appeared to have a current teaching license except one. Though Scott Beigel was said to have been shot, both a geography teacher and the boys' cross-country coach, I could find no certification whatsoever. Indeed, it turns out he previously taught at the school but left in 2012 and returned to New York. We have a photograph of him in New York, by the way. I'm now Jim Fetzer, not Alex Scott, where he's with, yes, none other than the sheriff, Scott Israel, together with Scott Beigel at a showman society meeting, showroom, S-H-O-M-R-I-M, which is a society of Jewish police officers. The whole thing is totally fraudulent. I want to say, indeed, we now have additional evidence, including that another student who's supposed to have been shot there is being interviewed. He's supposed to have been shot in the right leg. When he turns to the right to greet his parents, however, the leg doesn't move. The leg has no toenails. It appears to be a prosthetic leg. It's that bad. Now, Paul Craig Roberts has published a brilliant piece, A Stalinist Purge in America, that you want to check out. This year could turn out to be the defining year for the United States. It's clear the U.S. military security complex and the Democratic Party, aided by their media vassals, intend to purge Donald Trump from the presidency. One of the open conspirators declared the other day, "We have to get rid of Trump now before he wins re-election in a landslide." It's now a known fact that Russiagate is a conspiracy of the military security complex, Obama regime, Democratic National Committee, and prostitute media to destroy President Trump. However, the prostitutes never present this fact to the American public. Nevertheless, a majority of Americans do not believe the Democrats and the prostitutes that Trump conspired with Putin to steal the election. One question before us, will Mueller and the Democrats succeed in purging Donald Trump as Joseph Stalin succeeded in purging Lenin's Bolsheviks, including Nikolai Bukharin, whom Lenin called the golden boy of the revolution, or will the Democratic Party and prostitutes discredit themselves such that the country moves far to the right? We're seeing a proliferation of new websites that are independent of YouTube strikes. Check out VeteransTodayTV.com, independent of the old Veterans Today. VeteransTodayTV.com. I'm going to be moving there. I encourage you to think about it.
Mike? All right. Well, our next guest is Thomas Wertmann, and I'm going to give him a call right about now.
Hello?
Well, hello, Thomas. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Great. Okay. Last month, I talked a little bit about an incident involving some military aircraft off the coast of San Diego. I'm going to kind of recap that a little bit, but just before I do that, I'm on the internet now researching another event which occurred in Oregon. This goes back roughly last November, last November, where an object was spotted, in this case, going up from along California up into Oregon, and it was spotted on the radar, but it did not have a transponder, and also a number of pilots started noting it, started noting in such a way that they even responded F-18 fighters out of Oregon, and I'm just starting now to research a number of the audio tapes from those that were released through the Freedom of Information Act. So hopefully I'm going to have something for you next month on this. But it looks like another good case involving military aircraft, at least scramble and investigate something that they couldn't identify out there. So this is one I'll have for you next month. But this month, I just kind of wanted to recap a little bit more on an incident I talked about last month. We're involved in this case, back in November 14th of 2004, involving some military aircraft off of the coast of San Diego. What happened is the Princeton, which is a guided missile cruiser, picked up an object on radar at about 80,000 feet. And it had also monitored these objects for the prior 2 weeks at about 80,000 feet. And these things descended extremely quick speed down to the surface of the water. Well, the Navy also, in this case, contacted another a Navy aircraft in the area, which is a surveillance aircraft, an E-2 Hawkeye, to see if they could pick up the object on their radar. And they said they could barely track any signal, so the guided missile cruiser is the one who maintained contact. Well, a couple of Marine jets were performing maintenance duties in the area, and they sent a couple of the F-18 Hornets out to kind of investigate and see what was happening. And both aircraft were guided out to the scene. And as they got there, they know the only thing they saw was each other on their own radar. They could not pick up the object. They also didn't note anything at a higher altitude, but what they did see is a disturbance on the water, or as they thought, maybe below the water in this case. One of the F-18s descended, decided to do a flyby, on the flyby, as they started dropping altitude, it appeared that the surface of the water was no longer, in this case, being disturbed, like no longer bubbling. What he thought initially was maybe an aircraft had crashed in that region and was sinking into the water. Well, he did his flyby. Again, the water kind of went calm. And he was running low on fuel, and he was also being told to break off contact. So he went and started heading back to base. At that same rough instant, two Navy planes were arriving on the area. They were also F-18s. Also, in this case, they were being guided in by the same ship to Princeton. And as they arrived on there, they also did not see anything on their radar. But here's an unusual thing. I mean, it wouldn't be unusual for, in this case, military just to respond to something potentially off the coast. They could be thinking somebody's running drugs, something else along the coast. But in this case, when they went to respond, they were asked if they had ordnance on board, meaning do you have missiles, basically, or armament of some sort. And the only thing they had was dummy missiles, so they were basically unarmed. Well, they went in and got closer, and they were told that they'd merged with the object, meaning they were basically on this exact same location. And when they merged, they didn't see anything on their radar. Again, there was nothing at their altitude. So one of the commanders decided to descend, and as he did, he looks down and sees on the surface of the water a similar disturbance to what the other fighters had noticed on there. So he also decided to can do a flyby at a much closer altitude. And as he started descending, the object turned towards him and also came at him. And it started making, basically, it hit on a head-on course. Well, it started turning then, and he started turning and almost like trying to cut inside of it as a fighter would do in a dogfight. And he said that he could not stay with the turn this thing was performing on there. And next thing you know, the thing disappears at a high rate of speed. Well, a few things I've found out since last month is when this thing took off at a high rate of speed, the Princeton lost radar contact with the object on there. Also, so the pilot lost visual contact. Well, he was told to go back to an altitude or an area they called a cap altitude, which basically it's a position of surveillance that was about 60 miles from where the event began at. He was told to go there, get at a certain altitude and maintain that point. Next thing you know, Chuck, this object is picked up on radar at where he's supposed to be going. Now, here this thing is, it traveled 60 miles in a matter of minutes, and he's trying to get there, and he's still 40-some miles away, and this object is already there. Now, think about something that has the speed to do something like that. Now, as one of the pilots stated afterwards, he said, I thought this thing was from basically out of this world. He didn't think that we had anything with that technology to fly along those lines. Now, I'm not saying, one, that this is an object from out of the world, but on the other hand, we have to be aware of a craft that can be moving off of our coastal waters that has that type of capability of maneuvers. And is it ours? I hope. But if it's a foreign power, that's even more scary. Now, when I heard this story initially coming out, I was reminded of a story that was told to me by an individual at one of our MUFON of Ohio meetings. We're having a monthly meeting, and we're talking about different events throughout the meeting, as we always do. And by the way, anybody interested in attending our MUFON of Ohio meeting, if you're in Ohio, you can go to a MUFON Ohio website, and it'll give you a listing of locations. And if you're anywhere around the country, you can also go to MUFON.com, and it'll list out organizations throughout the country, which also has meetings on there. And you maybe will find a local chapter of meetings. Well, we're discussing events, and I could tell this young gentleman in the audience, about 40 years old, had a story he had to tell, but he just didn't want to tell it in front of a group. Well, he came up to me after the event, and he said, well, I just want to let you know, I did a tour of 20 years in the Navy. I was on flight deck. And he started describing seeing objects off of the carrier deck at a distance while he was in Desert Storm. And he said these lights were off in a distance. Next thing you know, they'd be scrambling jets to go out and intercept these objects. And when they took off to intercept them on there, according to the pilot stories he heard later on through the grapevine, the fighters would go up, they'd try to intercept them, and they were making similar moves to what these F-18 pilots described off the coast of California. The objects were made turning much tighter radiuses than what our fighters could. They were traveling at much higher speeds. And they kept being told to respond basically like day after day when these things would come around. And they got to the point that the fighter crews refused to go up because they felt like they're in a game of cat and mouse. And they said, it's basically useless to go up and try to stay with these things. And I heard this story about 9 years ago from my own personal experiences on there. And this other one came out from 2004. It just came out being released by, in this case, the Pentagon on there. Now, one of the things associated with this earlier event back in 2004, in this case, is there were also videos being released. Now, I did some more research on those videos since last month. In this case, when I did the research on the videos, I had some kind of doubts about the videos being accompanied with the pilots who were being presented on television. And that appears to be the case. The planes who did the initial intercepts of the object back in 2004 did not have FLIR technology on board their aircraft. But when you see the videos being displayed on television and also on YouTube channel, they say they were taking a FLIR technology on there. So it appears to be a misinterpretation. Now, I'm not discounting that the videos are valid, but it makes you wonder where those videos really came from on there. As a matter of fact, the Defense Department, there's some information being released by the Defense Department. They said that the videos, they did not release. And also they made comments about the fact that it appears as though the videos were potentially at the Defense Department, but they were potentially a lower classification. They weren't really marked as being classified. Now, they may have been stored in the area where classified material was, but they personally were not being marked as classified. Now, the DOD representative made a comment that all information has to be released from the DOD through proper channels on there. And everything they observed on these videos appears that they did not go through proper channels. So it makes the question arise, you know, was there, if you have a secret program out there looking for anomalies and they've got objects supposedly in these videos that are making extreme maneuvers, why weren't they marked as classified? Maybe either they knew they weren't so threatening at all, or, you know, maybe they knew much more than we did about these videos on there. The New York Times, which originally released those videos on there, they even changed their caption. The New York Times was trying to maintain some credibility for the story. They initially released them as saying that there's a caption, I believe, says something effective, the Department of Defense Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program had released these videos. Now it basically comes out and says on the two videos which were released, they were by the Defense Department. It doesn't say courtesy of the Defense Department, doesn't say anything like they're being released to proper channels out there. Now these videos are also being basically put on Two to Stars Academy's website, which is operated by Tom DeLonge. He was with a rock band called Blink-182. They're the ones who claims now they have custody of these videos. And one of the things, to me, it's interesting about that is these videos posted on their websites have garnered over about 3 million views. And I'm like, wait a minute. This is a for-profit organization. They've got these videos out there, which have gotten 3 million views. And when things are posted on YouTube, it's not so much people clicking on the video, which can potentially gain them money. It's if they click on the advertising. And I would be curious to find out, you know, how much money potentially these videos being put on their websites on YouTube channel have gained for this organization out there. When you see the beginning of the videos, that basically a text screen says that they're officially released by the DOD.
Well, I guess we're out of time, Thomas. That was really very interesting. We'll have to continue next month.
Okay, thank you very much.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now, a message in a Boone's Farm bottle. Some notes we have been receiving during the first half of our show from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegraph. Roberta in Milwaukee says, for over 30 years, the Casa Maria Catholic worker community held a nonviolent protest of war taxes, many of them leading to arrests. We believe that the military is the main reason for our poor economy, and yet it receives the most entitlements from taxpayers. The media tells us that the U.S. military gets only 20% of the budget pie, and it is never challenged on this fallacy. In their pie, much of military spending is hidden in other departments other than the Department of Defense. According to the War Resisters League, 45% of taxes, or $1,307 billion, go to the military. The U.S. accounts for 48% of the world's total military spending, more than the next 45 countries combined, and continues to be the number one exporter of weapons to cruel governments that use them to kill or maim their own citizens and eventually our own. Israel, a violator of 77 U.N. resolutions, received $2.775 billion in military aid and is now asking for $4 billion more. Since 1973, Israel has cost the U.S. taxpayers about $1.6 trillion. The U.S. continues to spend $12 billion a month in Iraq and Afghanistan and has already spent over $3.2 trillion on these illegal and immoral invasions since 2003. That adds up to $6,300 per American. Also, the U.S. still has to pay to rebuild what it destroyed in Iraq and Afghanistan, pay for the recovery of the young who were physically and mentally damaged, pay for the upkeep of the families of the many thousands of vets who did not return or are disabled for life, and it has to compensate the families of the tens of thousands of Iraqi and Afghan civilians who were killed and disabled for life. No legislator will deny money to the U.S. military for fear of not getting reelected to office. It is a sacred cow. Meanwhile, only 0.15% of the U.S. GNP goes toward assisting the 2 billion most needy in the world. From Don in Milwaukee, my wife and I cannot in conscience give any money to the military that could otherwise be used to save lives both here and abroad. For this reason, we continue to live below the taxable poverty level. If we have any extra money, it goes to those who lack the basics of life. Giving money to the military leads to more invasions and occupations, more destruction of property and lives, more orphans and widows, more wounded for life, more sickness and death due to weapons tipped with depleted uranium, more hatred and violence. The Tea Partiers need to ask, why is there always money for war and not for health, education, and employment? A message in a Boone's Farm bottle. Some notes we have been receiving during the first half of our show from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegraph. On the heels of its most recent successful campaign, modeled on the words of Henry David Thoreau, if you see something, say something, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has announced its next successful campaign, Every Town Gets a Shooting. The dearth of any bona fide terrorist threat in the U.S. no doubt accounts for the rash of contrived attacks, including most recently Aurora, Colorado, Tucson, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Santa Barbara, Seattle, Las Vegas, etc., which are being used to promote an aggressive anti-gun agenda. The 9/11 attacks were done by the U.S. government in Israel. There were no terrorists. There are no terrorists. Nobody died at Sandy Hook or Boston, and on and on and on. And so, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and President Donald Trump has set a goal, patterned after JFK's goal of reaching the moon, that within 5 years, every town in America will have a shooting of its own. And we'll be able to put up an old cannon or plaque and have a memorial day of the shooting and heroes and a bigger police building. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we are willing to accept. One we are unwilling to postpone. And one which we intend to win and the others too. Kennedy's speech used three strategies, a characterization of space as a beckoning frontier, an articulation of time that locates the endeavor within a historical moment of urgency and plausibility, and a final cumulative strategy that invites audience members to live up to their pioneering heritage by going to the moon. And then, of course, we faked going to the moon by using studios and props and Hollywood techniques, which we did have, in place of technology to actually get to the moon, which we did not have and still do not have. And in that same fake, brave spirit and tradition of deceit and cowardice, Donald Trump is telling us that these shooting and terrorist events are real. He tells anyone who will listen that Al-Qaeda and Bab-Qaeda attacked us on September 11, 2001, because if we figure out the truth, his whole life is a joke and a shambles. And so he's pretty nervous and pretty motivated to keep especially this lie going, like a performer racing around the stage trying to keep all those plates spinning. But eventually one crashes, then they all crash. President Donald Trump and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security are using three strategies, bullcrap, bullcrap, and bullcrap, in order to scare the American public into believing that those bumps in the night, which are actually FBI teams installing listening devices, are Al-Qaeda and Bab-Qaeda. In his recent address at the West Wing Presidential Laboratory, while standing all alone in the marble edifice at the lone urinal, with Secret Service agents standing dutifully outside, hands folded over their privates because they too have to peep, but they have to wait, President Donald Trump addressed himself and outlined the Al-Qaeda and Bab-Qaeda threat, setting as his goal that the United States people would each have a shooting in their hometowns, grow their local police forces to the size of the local Walmart staff, have ceremonial cannons and plaques and fake heroes and fake dead persons, and be so proud and scared to be Americans. He zipped up, walked proudly out of the presidential laboratory, past the Secret Service bathroom detail, trailing a 9-foot piece of presidential toilet paper with the face of George Washington pattern, all the way to the big press conference in the Rose Garden. And of course, everyone cheered. We at the New American Dream and Penn Magazine are issuing a call for sources, which follows. Call for sources. Penn Magazine and the New American Dream radio show asks for individuals who have information about events to come forward.
These are the events that have shaped our world. Sandy Hook, Boston, Las Vegas, 9/11, Oklahoma City, Aurora, Orlando, San Bernardino, the list goes on and on. These events, we believe, are in the false flag category. That is, somehow falsified to deceive and are attacks on the United States and on the world. We do not believe that the overall institutions of law enforcement, military, government, or media are adequately addressing these this very serious situation. So it falls to citizens to do their part, which we are hereby attempting to do. We believe that these events have been somehow manipulated, and we hope to be able to come into contact with individuals who have specific knowledge concerning these episodes and in turn relay the truth to the public. Please contact us, Mike Polachek, nwestiowa@gmail.com, Chuck Gregory, CWG@cwgservices.com.
Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, at the end of the Empire. The attacks of 9/11 happened what should seem a long time ago, but it does not. Seems like yesterday. There are people still locked away in Guantanamo. War still being fought. People being killed. Lies being told. New lies, old lies perpetuated and placed on monuments. All connecting in a straight line through the hearts of us all right to that day. That morning. September 11, 2001 happened everywhere, even in Moon Rock Lake, and now it can be told. At least something of how it affected the lives of the people there, what went on, the dirty details, even though it seems not so long ago. The truth. The story of at least a few of the people who lived here during that time. Enough time for someone to be born and grow to high school age. Enough time for those in high school at the time to have children of their own who don't have any reason to question, to ask questions. Until we could be quiet and let them be comfortable in not knowing. We could do that. Some of us still hear the news reports of those days, quotes we read somewhere playing in our minds, like there's a radio somewhere tuned to 12 years ago. Had to be there, as the saying goes, to understand what it was like. Kate Smith on the radio, George Bush on the TV, the towers coming down. Spring bloom with the joy of life to most, not all. To live in America and not encounter Americans would be damn difficult, he allowed. The postman, Pete Penny, grabbed handful of letters, slowly squeezing until they crumpled. With each bunch, he pictured good people gathered around Thanksgiving tables in 4th of July backyards. They're not good people. He clenched his jaw, bit his tongue without pausing. They only care about themselves. He touched his zipper to make sure it was up. Crushed a letter from somebody's pen pal in Des Moines, then scrambled to smooth it out on the table. Along one wall of the cavernous room stood 100 cases of It's What a Man's Got to Do selective service brochures, which Pete had tried to hide one afternoon by draping his rain poncho over the boxes. In a corner, a radio played Roy Orbison. Flush with the ceiling along the length of one wall, a full-color poster showed male and female postal workers smiling and staring at sample packages, depicting which types of packages were considered safe and which should be held suspicious. On the far wall hung an American flag that once flew over the Perkins restaurant at Disneyland, a gift from one of the carrier's customers who'd moved to Florida. A hot tar smell drifted in from the city crew down the street. In the middle of the large room, below half a dozen twirling ceiling fans on low, Pete entered the second hour of his workday as the flying Walenda sun balanced on the telephone wires. In front of him, the torn cover page of the February 21, 1964 Life magazine, 25 cents. Taped to the wall of his workstation, Lee Harvey Oswald holding a Mannlicher Carcano 6.6 millimeter carbine. Next to the life page was a hand drawing in colored pencil. The yellowing paper curled at the corner showed a front yard that could have been in Mount Liberty on Pete's mail route. It was a white front porch with a white cat sitting in the window. On the porch, two wicker chairs. Two bikes are in the yard, one upright with a kickstand down, one sprawled on the sparse lawn. An American flag hangs limp from the corner porch post. Two glasses of lemonade sit on the steps, one empty, the other half full. A hand pushes against the screen door from the inside. Another hand reaches up with a cigarette lighter, setting the flag afire. The signature at the bottom of the page says, Danny McGee, 1967. Pete Penny scratched his left calf with the edge of his right shoe. He sorted the mail for his route, firing each piece into a vertical slot on the large metal table in front of him. Flick, boom, flick, boom, flick, boom. Letters hit the back of the stalls like horses being jammed into the starting gate. Pete watched his hands working as if they weren't his, grabbing from the large pile, flipping into the slots representing neighborhood blocks. He heard the anxious banter of the carriers building around him. Pete watched the nail of the pointer finger on his right hand dig into the tip of his nose, then return to flipping. If he had a gun right now, this is where the revolution would start, he thought. Things could just be the way they were supposed to be. If he could just do his route, talk to the people in the sunshine, then come on back home. Click the gate closed on the picket fence on his way through and then sit down to watch the ball game, surrounded by 10 children and his freshman sweetheart. Then that would be a life worth living. Shit. Some people still do that. Some people don't realize what stupid fucks they are. They're just happy. Stay stupid and happy, thought Pete. And then Danny McGee's face flashed on his brain screen for an instant. God damn them all. Pete's right hand felt the length of his ponytail and itched between his shoulder blades before deigning to return to work. Two guys across the table talked about Iraq. Clean, shiny United States F-16s and B-52 knives, spreading a sticky layer of blood and intestines over the sand. Pete felt his face flush. He took one step around the table, then one back again. He slammed open the rubber van drawer and stuck his fist inside one, spreading his fingers to fit the circle, retrieving the day's mail for Park to Jones to Philip the Fourth and fitting the loop twice round. The tight bundle got tossed to the shine cement floor into a blue bag sporting a Robo Eagle profile. Pete yanked the string on the bag taut, grabbed the one next to it, and threw them both over his shoulders. He stalked toward the big doors like Santa who had just about had it. Pete's long shadow raced him across the parking lot to his van. He unlocked the back, leaned down to tear off the annoying ragged corner of the free Leonard Peltier bumper sticker, then snuffed up snot and watched his big feet walk around to the driver's door. After sucking in his paunch to snap his seatbelt, he checked his mustache in the mirror and turned on the swivel fan. "Just act normal," he said out loud. "You playing tonight?" Jumped when Jack Fran stuck his enormous head in the passenger side. Pete reached for the pistol under his seat and pulled his hand up, squeezed the padded steering wheel with both hands, threw his right arm over the passenger seat and leaned toward Jack with his answer, "Sure, what time?" 7:30. "Be there 7. Bring your $4 for beer, don't forget." Francis' head made its exit, then his right index finger and thumb shot Pete between the eyes. I will kill somebody before I play softball again, Pete vowed to the rearview mirror god. He turned to check behind, then backed out, rammed the van into gear, and took off. His stomach rumbled. All his life, Pete had listened to people more than himself. Play softball. Work here. Drink this. Shoot this. From Moonrock Lake Elementary, across the street from the postal shop, to Vietnam across the damn ocean. He was tired of people. They always disappoint you. I'm not the man they think I am at home, he whispered out his open window. No, 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 I'm a rocket man. Penny stayed in second gear, puttering past the middle school, ancient even when he'd passed through 100 years ago. Pete's stomach rubbed the steering wheel as he turned onto Phillip Avenue. He looked into the side mirror to adjust his wire rims and took his foot off the gas and his hands from the wheel. The postal buggy coasted to a stop in the middle of the street, 100 feet from the 4th Street intersection. Mrs. Rowe bent over with her head up her gladioli. Pete stared hard enough to tell she wasn't wearing underpants again. Sparrows and starlings darted from tree to tree with needles in their beaks as if weaving clothes for Cinderella. The sound of the semis backing up to the sales barn muffled the 8th grade jazz band practicing A Hard Day's Night. Pete bit down on his, hard on his molars and pulled the folded W-2 form from his front pocket. He remembered a lighter in the glove box, unsnapped the belt, and reached his full length for it. He remembered a hooch near Phan Long. This ought to burn. After testing the lighter, Pete held up the tax form and rested a corner in the flame. He watched the fire crawl toward his face. Ashes flickered out both open windows. Pete stared into the light. He pinched the far tip of the paper. The fire maneuvered to outflank his hot pointer and thumb. The edge of the orange bit him, and he flicked the wisp of curled paper into the street. U.S. government form. The ink and paper burned, shriveled, and went out. And that's the news. From Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week. And thank you, Mike. Good night.
Thank you, Chuck, for all you do, all the interviews, the technical work, everything that makes the show possible. And thanks to our guests, Jim Fetzer, Phil Ferruccio, Thomas Wertman, Richard Flamer, and sorry we had to miss Frank Cordero. We'll see Frank Cordero next week. Please visit the New American Dream website, where you will find information about all of our regular guests and also the show archives. It's at newdream.us. Also, Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. If you would like to donate to the Des Moines Catholic Worker or the Chiapas Catholic Worker, write to the Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And I believe that any donation there will, if you stipulate it to the Chiapas Catholic Worker, Frank will take care of that, I believe. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawksprung. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar McKean. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Listen, children, to a story that was written long ago.
About a kingdom on a mountain and the valley folk below. On the mountain was a treasure buried deep beneath the stone. And the valley people swore they'd have it for their very own. Go ahead and hate your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Do it in the name of heaven. You can justify it in the end. There won't be any trumpets blowing come the judgment day on the bloody morning after. One tin soldier rides away. So the people of the valley sent a message up the hill, asking for the buried treasure, tons of gold for which they'd kill. Came an answer from the kingdom, with our brothers we will share all the secrets of our mountain, all the riches buried there. Go ahead and hate your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Do it in the name of heaven. You can justify it in the end. There won't be any trumpets blowing come the judgment day on the bloody morning after. One tin soldier rides away. Now the valley cried with anger, mount your horses, draw your sword. And they killed the mountain people, so they won their just reward. Now they stood beside the treasure on the mountain dark and red, turned the stone and looked beneath it. Peace on earth was all it said. Go ahead and hate your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Do it in the name of heaven. You can justify it in the end. There won't be any trumpets blowing come the judgment day on the bloody morning after. One tin soldier rides away. Go ahead and hate your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Do it in the name of heaven. You can justify it in the end. There won't be any trumpet blowing come the judgment day on the bloody morning after. One tin soldier rides away.
What do you see? Homes being foreclosed. People working 2-3 jobs just to put food on the table and still drowning in debt. Don't get me wrong. This country is founded on great ideals and principles. They've all been ruined by the banks. Open your eyes to the banks that are robbing you. You know who my favorite president was?
Who?
Thomas Jefferson. Because he saw all of this coming and tried to stop it. He fought the banks. JFK too, and they killed him for it. The banking institution is more dangerous than an army, he said. He also said that every generation needs a revolution, Jimmy. The American dream is just that. Just a dream. War is a continuation of politics, only by other means. Politics is a continuation of economics by other means. This is our bank. This is our war. And this is our plan of attack.
Banks have become an essential threat to our democracy. So consider this
justice.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves